Welcome back to the Deep Dive. It is Monday, January 26, 2026. And if you have been glued to the news feeds like we have this morning, you know the situation in Minneapolis. It's not just moving fast.
No way.
It is effectively detonating in real time.
It is incredibly fluid. I mean, usually federal agencies move at the speed of a glacier.
Yeah.
But today,
yeah,
we are seeing a command structure just collapse and rebuild itself in a matter of hours.
We are talking about the headlines everyone is seeing right now. Gregory Bovino, the Border Patrol commander who has become the absolute face of this metro surge, is out.
He's out.
And the heavy hitter, the so-called border czar, Tom Homsen, is flying in. But here's the thing, and this is why we do these deep dives. If you just look at the names changing on the org chart, you're missing the actual story.
Right, because this isn't just about personnel management or some bureaucratic shuffle. It is about psychology.
No. Exactly. Today, we're going to try to answer the question, how did we get here? We have combed through a stack of breaking internal DHS updates, the actual articles of impeachment filed today against Secretary Kristi Noem.
And this next part is, it's gripping.
It really is. A fascinating behavioral analysis that compares what is happening right now on the streets of Minneapolis to the famous 1971 Stanford prison experiment.
It is a chilling comparison, I won't lie.
Hey.
But it provides a necessary framework. We need to move beyond just reporting the what, the tear gas, the press conferences, and really get to the why.
What were the behavioral triggers? Why did the situation escalate from law enforcement to something that looks a lot like urban warfare so quickly?
Yeah.
So let's unpack this. We have to start with the immediate news. Gregory Bovino, he is out of Minneapolis.
He is. Reports confirm that as of tomorrow, Tuesday, January 27, Bovino and a specific group of Border Patrol agents are leaving the city. He has effectively been relieved of his command in the metro area.
And the reason isn't exactly a state secret. It is the backlash.
Oh, it is the backlash. Specifically regarding the fatal shooting of Alex Preti.
Right, the ICU nurse.
Correct. And this is where the narrative really just fractured. You had Bovino and DHS leadership claiming, quite aggressively in the first 24 hours, that Preti intended to massacre agents.
They painted a very specific picture, didn't they, of a planned, lethal, tactical attack.
Mm-hmm. But then you have bystander video and witness accounts that surfaced almost immediately.
Which contradicted that story entirely. The video showed something that looked much more like a chaotic scuffle than a tactical assault.
Exactly. And when the video doesn't match the press release, public trust just evaporates. But I do want to clarify something, because I think there is some confusion online. Bovino isn't being fired from the federal government, is he?
No, and that is a crucial distinction in the notes here. He is not resigning. He is relocating. He is heading back to the El Centro sector in California. In fact, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt explicitly said he will continue to lead CBP across the country. So this is a tactical retreat from a specific hot zone, not a dismissal.
Which suggests the administration still backs his methods, just not the optics in this specific city.
Speaking of optics, we have to talk about the coat. I feel like we can't do this deep dive without mentioning the Der Spiegel detail.
Huh, the coat? It seems trivial, but the analysis suggests it actually matters quite a bit.
It sounds trivial until you see the photos.
It does. German media, specifically Der Spiegel, picked up on Bovino's choice of attire. He was wearing this long, brass-buttoned olive coat.
It was certainly a choice. It looked, well, it looked cinematic, to say the least.
It was a choice. Commentators immediately likened it to a fascist aesthetic. Now, Bovino denied that was the intent, obviously. But in psychological operations, or even just high-tension policing, symbols matter. Visuals matter.
Right. If you dress like an occupying force, the population reacts to you as an occupying force.
And now, to replace him. Enter Tom Homan.
Right. President Trump has dispatched Tom Homan to take over. For those who don't know, Homan is the border czar. He is the veteran hardliner.
So the message isn't, we are softening our approach.
Not at all. Bringing Homan in sends a very specific message about restoring order through strength. He is not a diplomat. He is an enforcer. But we will get to his specific rhetoric a bit later because it connects to how the media is spinning this.
Okay, so the leadership is swapping seats. But let's get to the core of this. The analysis comparing Minneapolis to the Stanford prison experiment. I think most people have a vague memory of this from like Psych 101, but can you give us the 30-second refresh?
Sure. 1971, Stanford University. A psychologist, Philip Zimbardo, takes a group of normal, healthy college students.
Totally normal kids.
And he randomly assigns them to be guards or prisoners in a mock prison built in the basement of the psychology building. The experiment was supposed to last 2 weeks.
But it didn't make it that long.
No. It was shut down in 6 days. The guards became psychologically abusive, subjecting the prisoners to degradation, and the prisoners started having emotional breakdowns.
And the big takeaway, the reason we still talk about it 50 years later, was that it wasn't about bad apples, right? These weren't sadistic kids to begin with.
Exactly. It was about the barrel. The situation itself created the evil, the environment, the rules, the power dynamic. It turned normal people into abusers.
And when we look at the source material analyzing Minneapolis through that lens, we see the exact same four variables playing out.
Let's run through them because this is where the insight really clicks. Variable one, the mask effect.
In psychology, we call this de-individuation. In the Stanford experiment, the guards wore mirrored sunglasses and uniforms. It hid their eyes, hid their humanity. It created a barrier.
And in Minneapolis,
we are seeing agents in full camouflage, gas masks, helmets, often in unmarked vehicles. Reports say they are operating without visible name tapes.
So you are anonymous. You are a faceless force.
And anonymity is dangerous. When you feel anonymous within a group, your personal accountability drops. You stop being John Smith, neighbor, father, guy who likes baseball, and you become the enforcer. It drastically increases aggression toward the out-group because you don't feel like you are doing it. The uniform is doing it.
Which leads right into variable two, role play, or what the analysis calls gamification. I saw a quote in the source material from a Guardian report that honestly made my stomach drop.
The Call of Duty quote.
Yeah. Leaked audio from an agent describing the operation as being like Call of Duty.
That is terrifying, but psychologically consistent. In the Stanford experiment, the guards performed the role they thought they were supposed to play. They acted like the tough guards they saw in movies like Cool Hand Luke. They were improvising a script.
And in Minneapolis, if agents are viewing the city as a video game combat zone,
it lowers the threshold for using force. If you frame the world as a game or a combat mission, firing a less lethal round doesn't feel like hurting a person. It feels like scoring a hit. It disconnects the action from the consequence.
It makes it not real.
Exactly. And this connects to the third variable, dehumanization. This is probably the most critical one. In the experiment, prisoners became numbers. Prisoner 819, they weren't people anymore.
In Minneapolis, just look at the rhetoric. The city is a lawless sanctuary. The protesters and even the victims like Alex Priddy are labeled domestic terrorists immediately.
Before the facts are even out.
Right. And that label does heavy lifting.
It does. Once you label someone a terrorist, you remove the moral cost of violence. You aren't hurting a citizen with rights. You are neutralizing a threat. It creates a psychological permission structure for violence.
Normal inhibitions against hurting people are just turned off because the target has been defined as not one of us.
Exactly. And the last variable was situational permeability, which sounds incredibly academic, but the explanation in the notes was actually quite practical.
It sounds fancy, but it just means putting people in the wrong environment. Former CDP Commissioner Gil Krilikaus made a really important point here in the research. He noted that these agents are trained for border interdiction hunting drug runners in the desert or prison management.
They aren't beat cops.
No, they are not trained for urban crowd control involving citizens exercising First Amendment rights.
So you take guys trained for the border, drop them in a dense city, give them gas masks, tell them everyone is a terrorist, and then we are surprised when it goes wrong.
That is the textbook definition of creating situational pressure for abuse. You are setting them up to fail by putting them in a context their training tells them is a war zone.
And this connects to something really interesting about the Stanford prison experiment that I hadn't realized until I read this deeper analysis. Zimbardo, the guy running it.
Yeah.
He wasn't just a neutral observer with a clipboard, was he?
No, and this is where it gets really interesting for our current political moment.
Yeah.
Zimbardo played the superintendent, he ran the prison, and because he didn't stop the abuse, because he let it slide, and at times even encouraged it, he signaled to the guards that it was okay. This is what he later called the Lucifer effect.
Good people doing evil things because the system and the boss allows it.
Exactly. And the critics in these articles are drawing a direct line to the superintendents of today, President Trump and Secretary Kristi Noem.
Because they aren't just watching from the sidelines.
They are framing the narrative. When the leadership preemptively labels victims as terrorists, again, before evidence is presented, just like with the Priddy case, they are giving the agents moral cover.
If the superintendent says, these people are dangerous enemies, The guards are going to treat them like dangerous enemies. The fish rots from the head.
Speaking of Secretary Noem, she is facing a lot more than just psychological criticism today. The source material mentions impeachment articles were officially filed today.
Yes, and this is a massive escalation. We aren't just talking about a press release condemning her. Representative Stephen Horsford and Robin Kelly are leading this, with 140 House Democrats co-sponsoring. They have filed 3 specific articles of impeachment against Secretary Noem.
Let's break those down because the details matter here. What exactly are they charging her with?
Article 1 is obstruction of Congress. The allegation is that she blocked lawmakers from visiting detention facilities. Specifically, she reinstated a 7-day notice rule that a court had already told them to stop using.
So basically saying, you can't see what we were doing in here unless you give us a week to clean up first.
Precisely. It denies oversight. Article 2 is violation of public trust. This focuses on the warrantless arrests and excessive force in cities like Minneapolis and Chicago. It explicitly cites the shootings of Alex Pretty and Renee Nicole Good as evidence of a pattern of rights violations.
And Article 3?
Self-dealing. This one involves the money, and it is a big number. She is accused of bypassing competitive bidding to award a $200 million recruitment ad contract to a firm called Strategy Group.
$200 million. That is not a small rounding error.
It is significant. And the kicker is that the firm reportedly has deep ties to DHS insiders. So the allegation is essentially corruption, using the crisis to funnel taxpayer money to friends.
On top of that, there are reports of internal politics getting nasty within DHS itself. Sources say Noem and her advisor, Corey Lewandowski, are trying to force out Rodney Scott, the CBP commissioner.
Wait, force him out? I thought they were all on the same team.
You would think. But the report describes an aggressive campaign to make his environment so uncomfortable that he resigns.
Constructive dismissal.
Exactly. It suggests a fracture in the leadership. They want total alignment, total loyalty. And if Scott isn't providing it, or if he is pushing back on some of these orders, they want him gone.
Which brings us to the internal dissent, because it sounds like it isn't just Rodney Scott who is uncomfortable. We have sources from inside DHS, and surprisingly, these reports are coming from Fox News.
That is what stood out to me. Fox News is usually the administration's most reliable amplifier. If they are reporting trouble, it must be real.
Even they are reporting on internal fuming within federal immigration enforcement.
What are the agents angry about?
They are angry about the narrative. Agents feel that Noem and Bovino moved way too fast to claim terrorism regarding the Pretty shooting.
So the agents on the ground know that the terrorism claim is shaky.
They know the video contradicts it, and they feel that leadership, by doubling down on a lie, is damaging the agency's credibility.
Right.
If you are a career agent, you don't want to be the fall guy for a political narrative that falls apart in court. You want your leaders to have your back with facts, not hyperbole that gets disproven by an iPhone video the next day.
That is fascinating. So the guards in our experiment comparison are starting to resent the superintendent.
To a degree. But we have to balance this. Fox is also giving a huge platform to Tom Holman. He was on Fox News Sunday, and he is positioning himself as the adult in the room.
What is his take? Is he addressing the dissent?
He is pivoting. He is defending the agents unconditionally. He said he truly believes they felt their lives were in danger. He is calling for an end to hateful anti-IC rhetoric.
So he is shifting the blame back to the critics.
Yes. It is a classic move. Don't look at the shooting. Look at the people criticizing the shooting. And note the detail Fox is emphasizing nationally, the gun.
The gun.
DHS claims Pretty had a 9mm handgun and 2 magazines.
Is that disputed?
The possession of the gun isn't necessarily the dispute. It represents the ambiguity of the situation. Was he an active shooter or a guy with a permit who got caught in a scuffle? The administration is using the presence of the weapon to justify the level of force retroactively.
And Holman is leaning hard on that to restore morale among the rank and file.
Exactly.
So bringing it all together, we have Bovino leaving, Holman entering, Noem facing impeachment but holding on.
And the system remains.
That is the real question, isn't it? We can change the guy at the top of the org chart. We can swap Bovino's coat for Holman's suit. But if the agents are still in camo, still anonymous, still being told they are in a war zone,
then the psychological variables of the Stanford prison experiment are still active. You can change the superintendent, but if the rhetoric doesn't change, the outcome on the street likely won't either. The barrel is still the same.
It really makes you wonder. We always talk about bad apples in these situations. It is the comforting explanation. But if we look at the Lucifer effect,
you have to ask if we have simply built a barrel that makes this behavior inevitable? Are we setting people up, Asians and citizens, for tragedy by the very design of the operation?
Something to think about as we watch the news this week. We'll be tracking the impeachment filings and Homan's first moves in Minneapolis closely.
Absolutely.
That is it for this deep dive. Thanks for listening.
Stay curious.